It's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, all of those places. Also, if you want to hear this show, you can, of course, listen live, Joy 620, every Tuesday afternoon at 5 o'clock, or you can listen to the podcast. You can find that at investinghope.com, iTunes podcast, Podbeam, TuneIn app, wherever podcasts are found. We would encourage you to subscribe, download, listen to that. So you don't have to listen live every time. Listening live is great. Maybe you're on your way home. But if not, you can get an episode and all the past episodes as well. We would appreciate that. So today we're going to talk about a number of things that have happened since last time I spoke with you, and mostly dealing with the Supreme Court. So it's been an exciting time for the pro-life movement, for pregnancy centers in general. With court decisions that have come up in the last few weeks. And you, if you remember, back in March, I went to Washington, D.C., and I spoke on behalf of pregnancy centers. And we had a rally on the steps of the Supreme Court because a big case was coming up, and we were, of course, wanting the court to rule in the favor of pregnancy centers. And so the ruling came out last week, and it was in our favor. And so we were really, really excited about that. Some of you may be hearing this for the first time and not sure what I'm talking about. So Thomas Glessner of NIFLA, which is an umbrella organization that works with pregnancy centers across the country, he and Alliance Defending Freedom, attorneys with Alliance Defending Freedom, were representing pregnancy centers in California and fighting this case. But he also wrote an article in USA Today that I'm going to read to you, because this gives some context of the importance of this decision. So the Supreme Court of the U.S. has issued a monumental decision preserving the fundamental constitutional liberty of free speech for all Americans. The decision in the NIFLA case is a stark rebuke to the state of California's attempt to restrict free speech rights. The court's decisions protects pro-life pregnancy centers and blocks attempts by the government to force citizens to repeat messages with which they fundamentally disagree. So NIFLA, a national network of 1,450 pro-life centers, filed suit against this law on behalf of its 150 California members. While our motion for a preliminary injunction was rejected by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, of course, if you know anything about the Ninth Circuit, that shouldn't surprise you, the Supreme Court has correctly ruled in favor of NIFLA and declared that the law likely violates the free speech rights of pro-life pregnancy centers. The right of free speech protected in the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution not only includes the right to speak, but also the right to not be compelled by government to repeat a message with which one disagrees and which violates one's conscience. The court correctly found that the California law clearly offends this principle. Now, for those that are listening to this and going, well, what is the California law? Well, here's the California law. It mandated that pro-life pregnancy centers advertise for state-funded abortion services by posting a large sign in their waiting area. The sign must contain a phone number for center patients to get an abortion. Non-compliance with the law would bring serious fines and penalties that would force most of these pro-life centers to close. There are over 150 pro-life pregnancy centers in California and nearly 3,000 nationwide, providing necessary resources to mothers who are contemplating abortion. Such services empower these mothers to choose life and continue their pregnancies. Medical services offered by the centers that are licensed medical clinics include ultrasound, confirmation of pregnancy, pregnancy diagnosis, STI testing and treatment, and other services as well. Other assistance offered by both medical and non-medical centers include baby clothing, diapers, prenatal vitamins, housing, referrals for medical and legal help, adoptions, and other critical services at no cost to pregnant mothers and no cost to the taxpayer. One service that these life-affirming ministries do not provide, however, is abortion. They are foundationally pro-life, and to refer for abortions violates their fundamental value. So perhaps most problematic, this law only applies to pro-life centers and do not provide abortion or abortion referrals. All other agencies that serve the needs of pregnant mothers are largely exempt. And abortion centers are not forced to refer pregnant women for free ultrasounds or adoptions at pro-life centers. May the government pass a law mandating that Alcoholics Anonymous be required to post a sign advising its participants on where the local liquor store is. Well, of course not. The First Amendment protects five fundamental freedoms that uniquely define the American experience in ordered liberty: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, and the freedom to petition one's representatives for a redress of grievances. The heart and soul of this amendment are the first two liberties, freedom of religion and freedom of speech. The issues in NIFLA clearly impact the future of these two cherished liberties. The decision of the Supreme Court upholds these liberties as fundamental constitutional rights that define the unique experience and freedom embodied in the American Republic. NIFLA commends the court's decision to protect the First Amendment. And NIFLA this court case stands against those who would use the power of government to suppress messages they do not like. This ruling is a major victory for the constitutional liberty of all Americans. So Thomas Glessner put that in a lot of words, in a lot of legal type words, but what it gets down to is the California law was forcing pregnancy centers, just like Hope Resource Center here in Knoxville, were forcing pregnancy centers in California to post signs in their lobby or somewhere in the building saying, here's where you can get an abortion, here's a phone number for an abortion clinic, and the state provides this abortion at no cost to you, because the state there, California government, they give subsidies for abortion. And so all of that to say that the government came in and said, hey, pro-life religious organization, you must do this. So what that says is the government is not just compelling, but it's forcing its citizens to go against their fundamental rights, to go against their values, and frankly, to go against their freedom of speech and freedom of religion. And so this isn't just about Christians. This isn't just about pro-lifers. This isn't just about pregnancy centers. This is a case that everyone should have been concerned about, because we've seen it with bakers across the country. We've seen it with different artists. Now we're seeing it with pro-lifers, that laws are being drawn up specifically to target a certain demographic, and that's what they were doing in California. Large abortion proponents, abortion advocates, partnered with the state of California to draft this legislation, and we know that because we've seen that across the country. The Freedom of Information Act allows us to see who is participating, who's lobbying, who's giving money, who's helping write these pieces of legislation. And in that, we are seeing that NARAL and Planned Parenthood and other large abortion advocates are coming together with far left-leaning legislators, with who they would call pro-choice, but they're pro-abortion legislators. And they're coming together and they're writing legislation to target pregnancy centers. And so that is what we are seeing, and that's what we were seeing in California. And we know that they went even further by exempting other medical clinics. They exempted everyone out of this bill except for pregnancy centers. You see, the goal is to close pregnancy centers. That's the goal. And what frustrates me is they're not open about that goal. I mean, my goal is to see that every abortion clinic is closed, so it makes sense that their goal would be to see pregnancy centers closed. Except the difference being, at an abortion clinic every single day in the U.S., 3,000 heartbeats are stopped. Now think about that. 3,000 heartbeats are stopped every single day in this country due to abortion. But at pregnancy centers, every single day, women are served, women are loved, they're receiving medical services, they're not paying a dime, and no heartbeats are stopped. And so they can disagree with our pro-life stance, but no life is being ended because of the work that we're doing at a pregnancy center. But I get it. They disagree with us. They think we're terrible people for whatever reason. And so they want to see us close. But they want to say, well, no, this is a freedom issue, and we're just wanting to get the information out to our people. Well, no, that's not the case. They're wanting to force Christians. They're wanting to force these pregnancy centers to do their work. California could, if they wanted to, have billboards up saying, here's where to get an abortion. California could, if they wanted to, take out ads in the paper, PSAs on the radio. They could reach out to a number of different places and say, here is where you can get an abortion, and here's how that happens. They could do all of those things. But no, they want to force pregnancy centers to do their work. That's what frustrates me. And we saw this in the court arguments. We saw the justices of the Supreme Court asking them when the abortion proponents, when the state of California was arguing their case, we saw this in the back and forth of, well, have you taken out billboards? Have you passed out flyers? Have you done these things instead of compelling and forcing pregnancy centers to go against what they stand for? Have you looked at other ways to get your message out? And the answer is no, we haven't. And then they say, well, do you have any documentation of, you say that pregnancy centers are manipulating women, that pregnancy centers are hurting women. Do you have any documentation showing that a woman was not given an abortion because she was manipulated? Well, no, we don't have that information. Well, so they had no information to back up. The simple fact was, we want to close pregnancy centers, and so we're going to pass a law that not only goes against pregnancy centers, but goes against the fundamental First Amendment right of free speech and freedom of religion. And so it was a good day when the court decided in our favor. Unfortunately, it was really close, but it was still a win, 5-4, that NIFLA and pregnancy centers across this country can continue to do their work based on their values and their convictions. And frankly, every American in this country can still fight for and stand for the freedom of speech and religion, regardless of what that religion is. So hats off to Alliance Defending Freedom. Hats off to NIFLA and Tom Glessner and all the attorneys and folks that were involved and people across the country praying in just an amazing time there for that particular case. Alliance Defending Freedom, over the past few years, have won multiple cases on behalf of Christians, on behalf of freedom of speech, freedom of religion over the last few years. And that's with a court that's kind of been up in the air. And so we, hats off to Alliance Defending Freedom. When we come back, we want to shift a little bit and talk about Justice Kennedy retiring and what that means for the pro-life movement. We'll be back. Wow. So as we're looking at the case at the Supreme Court with NIFLA and the California law, and that was a big win for us, and then with the retirement of Justice Kennedy, that's another big win for the pro-life movement. And for some of you may be going, well, I don't understand why that's the case. He was appointed by a conservative president. So let me fill you in. So the NIFLA win was followed up with more news from the Supreme Court as Justice Kennedy announced his retirement on June 27th. Kennedy's retirement was rumored for quite some time, but no one knew for sure when those rumors would meet reality. This news, coupled with the NIFLA case, caps off an incredible week for life. And I realize that some may not understand the importance of Justice Kennedy's retirement. He was appointed, after all, by one of the biggest stars of the conservative movement, President Ronald Reagan. This is true. But in Kennedy's time on the court, he did not prove to be the stalwart we hoped for on the issue of life. Instead, Kennedy's tenure was one of great ups and downs as he became the swing vote on a whole host of issues. His record had many referring to the Supreme Court as Kennedy's court, as his vote was the vote that ultimately decided the outcomes of many cases. This proved true back in 1992 in Casey versus Planned Parenthood. This case sought to challenge some of the restrictions placed on abortion by the state of Pennsylvania. Ultimately, the court decided that Roe v. Wade should be affirmed, which is what Planned Parenthood argued when they filed the lawsuit. Kennedy was instrumental in this ruling. His affirming of Roe v. Wade made many in the pro-life movement uncomfortable and concerned for the future. It's important to note that the 1992 case, although affirming Roe, also created the undue burden test that allowed states to, in fact, legislate restrictions on abortions. This test is vague and has caused other court cases, but this test and the ability to restrict abortion at some level was, at the very least, a small step in the right direction for life. Yes, the court did affirm Roe, but they also found that much of what Pennsylvania's legislation did in 1992 was, in fact, constitutional. This is why the pro-life movement seemed giddy this week. For the first time since 92, we see a real possibility for a legitimate challenge to Roe v. Wade and the real possibility of seeing that decision overturned. The court with Kennedy was basically a 5-4 court in favor of abortion rights. Kennedy's absence, however, with the right appointment, theoretically would flip the 5-4 court in favor of life. This would be a huge victory for life, our movement, and the American people. It is important that we not get caught up in the current news and neglect the work of the day. The fact remains, since 1973 in the landmark case that gave us abortion, pregnancy centers have been serving and seeing countless lives saved in our buildings. This work will not stop with Kennedy's retirement or with the overturning of Roe v. Wade. We must continue to serve and care for those that walk through our doors. The news in Washington doesn't change the needs of our patients. So we will work today, tomorrow, and next week to serve the city. Our patients aren't asking us who serves on the Supreme Court or in the Oval Office. Instead, they are simply looking for assistance in their time of need. Assistance, mind you, that we are willing and able to provide. And I care deeply about the goings-on in Washington, the Supreme Court, and the Oval Office. I will be engaged and involved as legislation and court decisions are made. I will also call for the overturning of Roe v. Wade as I long for a day where abortion is a footnote in the history books. We should engage in this process, but this process should not overtake our mission to serve our patients, for our hope is not placed in a court or an office. No, our hope is placed in the author of life and the creator of the universe. Now, celebrate these victories, but do so with a calm demeanor as we have much work to do and many to serve. Okay, so if you're a follower of Supreme Court decisions, then you know that Justice Kennedy, of course, was was instrumental in 1992 with the Casey versus Planned Parenthood. He also was instrumental in the swing vote when it came to redefining marriage back just a few years ago. So that's why a lot of folks were like, you know, his overall record was certainly one would call conservative, but there were key issues where he went the other way. When it came to freedom of speech, he was all conservative. He was all for the Constitution. But when it came to life, when it came to marriage, there were certain things that that he just did not side with the folks that we thought he would side with. And so that's where we are. And so a lot of people were thinking, well, he wants his legacy to stay intact. He's not going to retire until President Trump is out of office. But Justice Kennedy, I think, and judging by some articles that I've read, I believe saw the writing on the wall and believed that there were four justices currently on the court that were adamantly opposed to the First Amendment. And we know that because of the way they fought against NIFLA. We know that because of the way they fought against the Baker in Colorado. We know that because of the union case that came up just the other day. There's a number of cases where there are four left-leaning, hardcore justices that have time after time sided against freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is one of Justice Kennedy's main points, as it should be. He's a justice, and that is in the Constitution, and that is what the Supreme Court is supposed to be doing, is upholding the Constitution. Supreme Court's not there to write legislation. They're there to make sure legislation goes along with the Constitution. And so Justice Kennedy retiring at, I think he's 81, 82 years old. Some people are upset about that and saying that we need to really look into and investigate his retirement. And I'm going, he's 82 years old. He's already worked longer than most of the population. Let the man have a break. Let him go on vacation. Let him enjoy his family. And so we are going to look to who the next appointment will be. But if you've been following cable news and social media and watching what both sides have been saying about this, of course, pro-lifers are excited because we see this as an opportunity for someone to challenge Roe v. Wade. Now hear this, though. What won't happen is President Trump will not nominate another justice and that justice be approved by the Senate, and then immediately the Supreme Court say, okay, Roe v. Wade, first thing on the docket. That's not how any of this works. What will happen is an appointment will be made, Senate will approve, and then the Supreme Court will work like they always do. And as cases present themselves, there may be a time down the road where with one of those cases, there's a look at Roe v. Wade. But there may not be soon. It may be later. Who knows what that looks like? But we certainly have confidence that when that time comes, and I do believe it will come, that with the right members on the court, they will overturn one of the worst decisions the court has ever decided on, which is Roe v. Wade. But that's not going to happen immediately. And frankly, even if it does happen, it doesn't outlaw abortion. It goes back to the states. And so, yes, what you will have is you will have parts of the country, blue parts, blue states, California, New York, that have abortion. And then you will have a number of other states that will craft laws that will outlaw abortion. And so if a person wants to receive abortion, they will have to travel across state lines. And so, yes, that some say that's putting obstacles in the way. Well, yes, that does. But there are laws on the books already in other cases for other things where you are not allowed to do something in one state that you can do in another state. Right now, if you want to smoke marijuana, you can go to Vermont and smoke marijuana. You can go to Colorado and smoke marijuana. You can go to California and smoke marijuana, but you can't smoke marijuana in Tennessee. That is what the founders envisioned, was the states would operate the way the states wanted to operate. And then you have the freedom to move. You have the freedom to go anywhere in this country that you want to go. And so ultimately what will happen is there will be a law. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, it will go back to the states. Now one could argue that one day maybe we have a federal law that says abortion is outlawed across this country. I don't foresee that day, but maybe that is a day that is coming. But at the very least, if we could overturn Roe v. Wade, we get us back to a place where we are celebrating life. And someone the other day said, I just don't see where there's precedent. I don't see where there's a need to overturn Roe v. Wade. And my response to that is, since 1973, 60 million lives, innocent American lives, have been lost to abortion. And that's just the numbers on the books. There's probably more than that, but we'll stick to those. 60 million lives lost since 1973. American lives. That's reason enough for me to see that law overturned. When we come back, we're going to look at some possible appointees, the folks that the president is looking at and vetting and seeing who may be the next Supreme Court justice. Will it be a female? Will it be a male? I'm leaning female, and we'll talk about her when we come back. Okay, so we're talking about the Supreme Court. What is the one issue when we look at the issue of abortion and we look at the issue of life and pregnancy centers versus abortion clinics and reproductive rights and all of these things? You know, we always hear that it's a woman's issue. You know, when men like me stand up and say, "Hey, life begins at conception, abortion is wrong," I'm told, "You're a dude, you need to shut up. What do you know? You can never have kids." Although, you know, men have, you know, some involvement in that. I have four kids at home. But as we look at that, it's interesting when we have that discussion, it's almost as if only men are pro-life. Well, that is just crazy. The vast majority of the folks that work in pregnancy centers are female. And so as we look at the next Supreme Court justice, and frankly, if we look back at the campaign against the current president, we look at the talking points that were used. Many said that he was sexist, and there, no females would be involved in the administration. And we've seen that females have been appointed to cabinet positions, and now I believe that the president's going to nominate a female to replace Justice Kennedy. And so I want to inform you of the female I believe he is going to nominate. And the interesting thing about this is she's pro-life. And so we're going to have a discussion on, well, this is a woman's issue. This is a woman's issue. And here is a woman that is going to be able to talk from a legal standpoint. She's got a resume to back everything up. And so it's going to be interesting. And her name is Amy Barrett. And so there's a couple things that I want you to know about Amy. She's considered to be a devout Catholic. According to the New York Times, she and her family belong to the Catholic Church. Amy Barrett and her husband, who is a federal prosecutor, they have seven children together. Two of the children were born in Haiti, and they are also raising a special needs child. Barrett, 46, is a former law professor who took a seat on the federal bench in 2017 as a Trump appointee. So if you followed along with any of the appointees during the during 2017, you probably heard about Judge Barrett, and you can read her Judiciary Committee questionnaire from when she was first nominated to the federal bench. You can find that online. She was confirmed in 2017. That's another key point. She's already been confirmed once by the Senate. And here's what you need to know. A Democratic senator caused controversy by saying that she was concerned with the dogma that lives in Barrett. And so what she meant by that is your faith is so strong that it's clear to all of us on this panel that it drives you. The dogma inside of you. And so from a Christian standpoint, wouldn't we all hope that someone would be able to say that about us? Wouldn't we all hope that if we were put on trial that they would find us guilty of being a Christian? And so from my standpoint, a senator saying that to her just means that she's living out her convictions. And so what we found was some senators said, you know, your religion's a concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country. Then she added that you are controversial. Because many of us who have lived our lives as women really recognize the value of finally being able to control our reproductive systems. And Roe entered into that, obviously. You have a long history of believing that your religious beliefs should prevail. So she was attacked. Why? Well, because she's Christian. Because she's pro-life. You know, an amazing thing, some people are saying, well, all Amy Barrett wants is for women to stay at home and not work. She thinks that's where women should be. But when they say that statement, they refuse to recognize that Amy Barrett is a judge, an attorney, a mother of seven, a Christian. She's able to do that. So frankly, in fact, what she has done is proven that you can have your baby and your dreams seven times over. She also was a law professor at Notre Dame. According to National Review, Amy Barrett is considered a devout Catholic. She speaks about God as if she really believes in his existence. National Review went further. In a graduation speech, Barrett referenced God, saying, "No matter how exciting any career is, what is it really worth if you don't make it a part of a bigger life project to know, love, and serve the God who made you?" The Christian Broadcasting Network reported that evangelicals were buzzing about Amy Barrett, and they said, "Many of my sources, evangelical in nature, love her. They believe that she is the one that if they had their dream pick, that she would be the one. Barrett has been very outspoken about her Catholic views and God." And so she's done a lot of great work. What Barrett also believes that life begins at conception. Life begins at conception. So from a pro-lifer standpoint, that excites us. We know that she's adopted children. She's currently raising a special needs child. So she believes that life begins at conception. She believes that every human bears the image of a creator, of our creator. And so this is who I believe will be nominated and ultimately, hopefully, appointed to the Supreme Court. And frankly, if they take the path of arguing against her religion as a reason not to confirm her, well, that's going to be that's not going to bode well when it comes to the American public. And again, making this about Roe v. Wade from either side is not helpful. It's not honest. That's a big part, but it's not the main part. And so what we're finding is where some people are saying, well, Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. It's the law of the land. We can't possibly look at it in any other way. We can't overturn Roe v. Wade. It's the law of the land. But think about that argument. Think about that argument. We talked a couple weeks ago about the border issue. And I argued that the reason why America is the best country on the planet is because we were willing to look in the mirror and correct mistakes. We were willing to look in the mirror and say, slavery is not okay. Women should be able to vote. Segregation is wrong. You see, we made a decision as a country, as people, as elected officials, to say these were wrong and we are going to correct these wrongs with new legislation, with constitutional amendments. And so to say that, well, this law is the law of the land, there are no changing that, is crazy talk. There are things in the Constitution, certainly, that are not up for grabs. Freedom of speech. I mean, just go down the whole list. They're not up for grabs. Roe v. Wade is not in the Constitution. Now they look back in 1973 and they pulled out a clause from way back when that had nothing to do with abortion to try to paint it that way. But this is a case that we need to look at again, that needs to be overturned. And just simply saying, well, it's the law of the land, forget about it. Well, then if that's the case, why did we look at the marriage issue? It was the law of the land. Why did we look at any of the issues? It's the law of the land. Why change them? Why do we amend the Constitution? Why do we amend laws that are already on the books? If it's the law of the land, there's no point of doing that. Well, because, of course, we're trying to make things better. Now, sometimes in that attempt to make things better, we make things worse, but the point is still the same. If we have a bad law on the books, we should seek to correct it. Now, there's a legislative process for that, and then if it's challenged in court, then the court gets to decide. But ultimately, it's a legislative process that starts that. And so the only way Roe v. Wade is looked at from the Supreme Court is if there's legislation that would prompt that look. And so I do believe that Judge Barrett is going to be the nominee for a number of reasons. I think they're looking at it as that they do want a female. They want another female. I think it's clear that the current administration, in terms of who has been surrounding the president, very pro-life. And so they're looking for someone that would uphold that. But not just to, hey, I'm pro-life, but someone that will say the Constitution matters. And what was envisioned in that document to begin with matters. And that's how we will decide these cases. But the woe is me, the some folks acting like America is over now because Kennedy retired and another judge gets appointed is just crazy. I don't get it. We should not be so bent out of shape because of a Supreme Court appointee. We shouldn't. Sure, we can be happy, we can be a little upset, but ultimately we have a process in place. We have three branches of government for a reason. And so the court isn't just the be all end all. And many people have been making this just the issue of the day. There was a CNN contributor just the other day that wrote an article saying that with Justice Kennedy's retirement, Roe v. Wade is over. In his words, he said that gay people would not be able to allow to go into restaurants or anything. He was just fear-mongering. None of that's true. None of that's true. Roe v. Wade could possibly be overturned, maybe, sometime down the road. But the vast majority of the American people aren't really worried about who's going to be appointed, who's not going to be appointed. And so what we have to do is continue to do our work, continue to serve our God. Sure, be engaged in the process. Be involved in the process. Care about the process. Pray about the process. Pray for the next appointee to the Supreme Court. Because they're going to be there for a long time. But that shouldn't make you lose sleep at night. It shouldn't be the first thing you wake up and think about. And it shouldn't be the last thing you think about when you go to bed at night. Hug your kids, love your family, celebrate the 4th tomorrow, go to a parade, have a cookout. Don't think about the Supreme Court. It'll take care of itself. again, read about it, be engaged, and understand what's going on, but do not let it consume your life. Since this last election, so many people on both sides have let it consume their life. That is dangerous. It's not healthy. It's not Christian. Love your God first before anything. Love your family. Take care of those things. And then let the other, the political process take its place. We'll be back. Say, you hold me safe. I'm okay. I'm okay. Completely safe. So if you're listening to this show and you're thinking, well, how can I be pro-life? How can I be involved and engaged and not let it consume me? What is the best way for me to really impact my community, to impact the country, impact the globe for the pro-life movement? I would say, and of course, you know, I serve at a pregnancy center, so this is, maybe I'm a little biased, but I would say get involved with a pregnancy center in your community. If you live here in Knoxville, I know of one that you can contact. In Hope Resource Center, investinghope.com, and you can click volunteer and we can get in touch with you and talk to you about that. But other ways to do that is helping us raise funds. Again, we do not charge a dime to any of the patients that walk in our doors at Hope Resource Center. And so when I talk about the Supreme Court, when I talk about legislation, when I talk about the political side of the pro-life movement, what I don't want you to hear is that there isn't other things happening. So yes, there is a political side. Yes, there is a Supreme Court component. Yes, the NIFLA case was very important to the pregnancy center movement and to our work. But the fact remains, every single day at Hope Resource Center, we're getting up and serving the patients that walk in our doors. And we need your help in doing that. And you have been there for us the last 20 plus years in helping us serve the women of this city. And so I'm excited to tell you that we're having our first 5K race on September 1st. On Cherokee Boulevard over in Sequoia Hills here in Knoxville. If you are a runner, if you're not a runner, if you're a walker, if you're someone that likes to watch runners, which that's strange, don't do that. But if you're into that, you need to be a part of the 5K that is coming up September 1st. And we came up with a really cool, hip, relevant name for the 5K, and it's going to be called the Hope 5K. And it's on September 1st. At Sequoia Hills, right there on Cherokee Boulevard. If you've never been into Sequoia Hills, first off, you should just drive through it. Maybe you're listening to my words today and you live there. Well, you're blessed. Hashtag blessed that you get to live there. But it's an amazing area. The run will be fun right down by the river, and it's going to be a great day. All the funds raised, of course, will go to Hope Resource Center and allow us to continue to do our work. September 1st from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. It should not take you that long to run that 5K. But if it does, we're going to be there with you the whole time cheering you on. It'll be a great day. We'll hopefully have some food trucks there. I haven't nailed that down yet, but we're hoping to do that. So it'll just be a great day to come out, run, have some fun, bring your kids, let them run. I was telling my wife last night, I think I'm going to let my son, who is 7, because he has tons of energy, run in the 5K. Will I run in the 5K? I don't know. But I'm definitely going to be there and participate in some shape, form, or fashion. And then we would love to see you there running with us or walking. You don't have to run. Or jogging or power walking, whatever it is that you do, we want you there. And you can go to our website, investinghope.com. You can find the event on Facebook. We want you there. So sign up and be a part of that. And it is, if you have a group of people, I talked to somebody the other day that said they want to bring a group. So we have a discounted rate for groups. So if you're just an individual running, it's going to be $20 if you sign up online before race day. If you have a group of 10 or more, it'll be $15 a piece for that group, again, before race day. If you sign up on race day, it's going to be $25. But it's going to be fun. Sequoia Hills Park, right there on Cherokee Boulevard, right off Kingston Pike. So we want you there, and we encourage you to come and be a part of the 5K. We also, if you're listening and you're a golfer and you want to golf with us, we have a golf tournament coming up in October. We'd love for you to be a part of that over at Gettysview. We have a pastor's breakfast coming up that I'll be talking about more as we get closer to that date and bringing in pastors to talk about the work of Hope Resource Center. A lot of great things happening, and we could not do anything without you. So we were able to serve the last 2 days around 12 to 15 patients each day, a number of different ultrasounds, a number of different stories. We also had a couple come in yesterday that are former patient, and they brought in their two-year-old little girl, and I wish you could be there to see just how precious that was and what a joy it was to spend a little bit of time with them and see the work that the Lord is doing through them and with their child. And none of that would be possible without you. So we thank you for that. Learn more about Hope and InvestingHope.com, and we'll talk to you next week.
Welcome me home, like I've never gone astray. The orphan child has found a family. I give in to your kindness, and I melt in your embrace. In you my path meets grace, grace, grace.